Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbath Church and Congregation of the 12th Hour in the Oakland, Texas. Today is May the 4th, 2025, or it's the 8th day of Zith, 2029. We're going to start our service today with a continuation of where we left off from our reading. Patriarchs and Prophets were on page 99, and we're in the section of the flood. This is the second part, part two of the flood. And we're just going to pick up where we left off. But upon the eighth day, dark clouds. Now we'll do a little review. We'll go back and read our last paragraph. That's on page 98. It says that for 7 days after Noah and his family entered the ark, there appeared no sign of the coming storm. During this period, their faith was tested. It was a time of the triumph for the world without, where the apparent delay confirmed them in the belief that the Noah's message was a delusion and that the flood would never come. Notwithstanding the solemn scenes which they had witnessed with the beast and birds entering into the ark and with the angel of the Yahweh closing the door, for they still continued their sport and revelry. Or you might say, yet they still continued their sport and revelry, even in the making of a jest of the signal manifestations of the Yahweh's power. For they gathered in the crowds about the ark, deriding its inmates with a daring violence which they had never ventured upon before. But on the eighth day, dark clouds overspread the heavens. There followed the muttering of the thunder and the flash of the lightning. Soon large drops of the rain began to fall. For the world had never witnessed anything like this, and the hearts of men were struck with the fear. All were secretly inquiring, can it be that Noah was in the right, and that the world is doomed to destruction? Darker and darker grew the heavens, and faster came the falling rain, for the beasts were roaming about in their wildest terror, and their discordant cries seemed to moan out their own destiny and the fate of man. Then the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of heaven were opened. Water appeared to come upon the clouds in the mighty cataracts. Rivers broke away from their boundaries and overflowed the valley. Jets of water burst from the earth with the indescribable force, throwing massive rocks hundreds of feet into the air, and these, in the falling, buried themselves deep in the ground. For the people first beheld the destruction of the works of their own hands. For their splendid buildings and their beautiful gardens and groves where they had placed their idols were destroyed by the lightning from heaven, and the ruins were scattered far and wide. The altars on which the human sacrifices had been offered were torn down and the worshippers were made to tremble at the power of the living Yahweh, and to know that it was their corruption and idolatry which had called down their destruction. As the violence of the storm increased, trees, buildings, rocks, and earth were hurled in every direction, for the terror of man and beast was beyond description. Above the roar of the tempest was heard the wailing of a people that had despised the authority of the Yahweh. For the Satan himself, who was compelled to remain in the midst of the warring elements, feared for his own existence. He had delighted to control so powerful a race and desired them to live, to practice their abominations and continue their rebellion against the ruler of the heaven. He now uttered imprecations against the Yahweh. Charging him with the injustice and cruelty. Many of the people, like the Satan, blasphemed Yahweh, and had they been able, they would have torn him from the throne of power. Others were frantic with the fear, stretching their hands toward the ark and pleading for the admittance. But their entreaties were in vain. Conscience was at last aroused to know that there is a God, there is a Yahweh who ruleth, that there is a ruler, with his name is Yahweh, who ruleth in the heavens. For they called upon him earnestly, but his ear was not open unto their cry. In that terrible hour, they saw that the transgression of the Yahweh's law had caused their ruin. Yet while through fear of the punishment, they acknowledged their sin, they felt no true contrition, no abhorrence of evil. They would have returned to the defiance of heaven had the judgment been removed. So, when the Yahweh's judgment shall fall upon the earth before its deluge, by the fire the impenitent will know just where and what their sin is, for the despising of his holy law, yet they will have no more true repentance than did the old world sinners. Some in their desperation endeavored to break into the ark, but the firm made structure withstood their efforts. Some clung to the ark until they were borne away by the surging waters, or their hull was broken by the collision with rocks and trees. Before the massive ark trembled in every fiber as it was beaten by the merciless winds and flung from it billow to billow. The cries of the beast within expressed their fear and pain. But amid the warring elements, it continued to ride safely. Angels that excel in strength were commissioned to preserve it. For the beast, exposed to the tempest, rushed toward man, as though expecting help from hell. Some of the people bound their children and themselves upon the powerful animals, knowing that these were tenacious of life and would climb to the highest points to escape the rising waters. Some fastened themselves to the lofty tree on the summit of the hills or mountains, but the trees were uprooted and with their burden of the living beings were hurled into the seething billows. One spot after another that promised safety was abandoned. As the waters rose higher and higher, the people fled for refuge to the loftiest mountains. Often man and beast could struggle together for a foothold until both were swept away. From the highest peaks, men looked abroad upon a shoreless ocean, where the solemn ones of Yahweh's servant no longer seemed a subject for ridicule and scorning. How those doomed sinners longed for the opportunities which they had slighted. How they pleaded for 1 hour's probation, one more privilege of the mercy, one call from the lips of Noah. But the sweet voice of the mercy was more to be heard by them. But the sweet voice of the mercy was no more to be heard by them. Love no less than justice demanded that the Yahweh's judgment should put a check on sin. For the avenging water swept over the last retreat, and the despisers of the Yahweh perished in the black depths. By the word of Yahweh, the world that then was being overflowed with the water perished, but the heavens and the earth, which are now by the same word, are kept in store, reserved unto the fire against the day of the judgment and perdition of the ungodly men. Another storm is coming, for the earth will again be swept by the desolating wrath of Yahweh, and sin and sinners will be destroyed. The sins that call for the vengeance upon the antediluvian world exist today. For the fear of the Yahweh is banished from the hearts of man, and his law is treated with the indifference and contempt. For the intense worldliness of that generation is equal by that of the generation now living, said the Yahshua, as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. Yahweh did not condemn the antediluvians for calling, for eating and drinking. He had given them the fruits of the earth in a great abundance to supply their physical want. Their sins consisted in the taking these gifts without gratitude to the giver, and debasing themselves by indulging appetite without the restraint. It was lawful for them to marry. Marriage was in Yahweh's order. It was one of the first institutions which he established. He gave special direction concerning this ordinance, clothing it with the sanctity and beauty. But these directions were forgotten and marriage was perverted and made to minister at the Passion. For a similar condition of things exists now. That which is lawful in itself is carried to excess. Appetite is indulged without the restraint. Professed followers of Yahshua are today eating and drinking with the drunken, while their names stand in the honored church records. Intemperance, benumbs the moral and spiritual powers and prepares the way for the indulgence of the lower passions. Multitudes feel under no moral obligation to curb their sensual desires, and they become the slaves of lust. Men are living for the pleasure of the sense, for this world and the life alone. Extravagance pervades all circles of society, for the integrity is sacrificed for the luxury and display. They that make haste to be rich pervert justice and oppress the poor, and slaves and souls of men are still bought and sold. Fraud and bribery and theft stalk unrebuked in the high places and in the low. For the issues of the press teem with the records of murder, crimes so cold-blooded and causeless that it seems as though every instinct of humanity were blotted out. And these atrocities have become of so common occurrence that they hardly elicit a commitment or awaken surprise. For the spirit of the anarchy is permeating all nations, and the outbreaks that from time to time excite the horror of the world are but indications of the pent-up fires of the passion and lawlessness that, having once escaped control, will fill the earth with woe and desolation. For the picture which the inspiration has given of the antediluvian world represents too truly the condition under which the modern society is fast hastening, even now, in the present century, and in the professedly Christian lands, there are crimes daily perpetrated as black and terrible as those for which the old world centered were destroyed. Before the flood, Yahweh sent Noah to warn the world that the people might be led to repentance and thus escape the threatened destruction as the time of the Yahshua's second appearing draws near. Yahweh sends his servants with a warning unto the world to prepare for that great event. Multitudes have been living in the transgression of Yahweh's law, and now he in his mercy calls them to obey his sacred precept. All who will put away their sins by the repentance toward Yahweh and faith in the blood of Yahshua are offered pardon, but many feel that it requires too great a sacrifice to put away sin. because their life does not harmonize with the pure principles of Yahweh's moral government, they reject his warnings and deny the authority of his law. Though the vast population of the earth before the flood, only 8 souls believed and obeyed Yahweh's word through the Noah. For 120 years, the preacher of righteousness warned the world of the coming destruction. But his message was rejected and despised, so it will be now. Before the lawgiver shall come to punish the disobedient, transgressors are warned to repent and return and to their allegiance, but with the majority, these warnings will be in vain. Says the Apostle Peter, there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lust, and saying, where is the promise of his coming? For since the fathers have fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning. Do we not hear these very words repeated, not merely by the openly unrighteous, but by many who occupy the pulpits of our land? For there is no cause for the alarm, they cry. Before the Yahshua shall come, all the world is to be converted, and righteousness is to reign for 1,000 years. Peace, peace, all things continue as they were from the beginning. Let none be disturbed by the exciting message of these alarmists. But this doctrine of the millennium does not harmonize with the teachings of Yahshua and his apostles. For Yahshua asked the significant question, when the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on the earth? Okay. In other words, shall he find faith in the blood of the Yahshua and the plan of salvation through the blood of Yahshua? And as we have seen, he declared that the state of the world will be as in the days of Noah. Paul warns us that we may look for the wickedness to increase as the end draws near. For the Spirit speaketh expressly that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith and the blood of the everlasting covenant of the new and living way, the plan of salvation of the Yahshua, Hebrews chapter 10, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. For the apostle says that in the last days, perilous times shall come. And he gives a startling list of sin that will be found among those who have a form of righteousness. As the time of their probation was closing, the antediluvians gave themselves up to the exciting amusements and festivities. Those who possessed influence and power were bent on keeping the minds of the people engrossed with the mirth and pleasure, lest any should be impressed by the last solemn warning. Do we not see the same repeated in our day? While the Yahweh's servants are given the message that the end of all things is at hand, the world is absorbed in the amusements and pleasure seeking. There is a constant round of the excitement that causes indifference to Yahweh and prevents the people from being impressed by the truth, which alone can save them from the coming destruction. In the Noah's day, philosophers declared that it was impossible for the world to be destroyed by the water. So now there are men of the science who endeavor to show that the world cannot be destroyed by the fire, that this would be inconsistent with the laws of nature, that the Yahweh of the nature, as the maker and controller of her laws, caused the works of his hands to serve his own purpose. Oh, I'm going to repeat that again. This would be inconsistent with the laws of the nature, but the Yahweh of the nature, the maker and controller of her laws, can use the works of his hands to serve his own purpose. When the great and wise men had proved to their satisfaction that it was impossible for the world to be destroyed by water, when the fears of the people were quieted, when all regarded Noah's prophecy as a delusion and looked upon him as a fanatic, then it was that the Yahweh's time had come, for the fountains of the great deep were broken up, and the windows of the heaven were opened, and the scoffers were overwhelmed in the waters of the flood. With all their boasted philosophy, men found too late that their wisdom was foolishness, that the lawgiver is greater than the laws of the nature, and that the omnipotence is at no loss for the means to accomplish his purpose. As it was in the days of the Noah, even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed, for the day of the Yahshua will come as a thief in the night, and which the heaven shall pass away with a great noise, and the elements shall melt with a fervent heat, the earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. When the reason of the philosophy has banished the fear of the Yahweh's judgment, when the religious teachers are pointing forward unto the long ages of the peace and prosperity, and the world are absorbed in their rounds of the business and pleasure, planting and building, feasting and merrymaking, rejecting Yahweh's warnings and mocking his messengers, then it is that sudden destruction cometh upon them, and they shall not escape. Okay, that's the end of chapter 7. And now our next study is entitled, or subtitled, is After the Flood. This is chapter 8. And we're on page 105, Patriarchs and Prophets. So we'll continue on our study. Well, we have about 30 minutes left. For the waters rose 15 cubits above the highest mountains, for it often seemed to the family within the ark that they must perish. As for 5 long months, their boat was tossed about, apparently at the mercy of the wind and the wave. It was a trying ordeal, but the Noah's faith did not waver, for he had the assurance that the divine hand was upon the helm. As the waters began to subside, the Yahweh caused the ark to drift into a spot protected by a group of the mountains that had been preserved by his power. For these mountains were but a little distance apart, and the ark moved about in this quiet haven, and was no longer driven upon the boundless ocean. This gave great relief unto the weary, tempest-tossed voyagers. Noah and his family anxiously waited for the decree of the waters, for they longed to go forth again upon the earth. 40 days after the tops of the mountains became visible, they sent out a raven, a bird of the quick scent, to discover whether the earth had become dry. This bird, finding nothing but water, continued to fly to and from the ark. 7 days later, a dove was sent forth, which, finding no footing, returned to the ark. Noah waited 7 days longer and again sent forth the dove. When she returned at evening with an olive leaf in her mouth, there was great rejoicing. Later, Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and behold, the face of the ground was dry. Still, he waited patiently within the ark. As he had entered at Yahweh's command, he waited for special direction to depart. At last, an angel descended from heaven, opened the massive door, and bade the patriarchs and his household go forth upon the earth and take with them every living thing. In the joy of their release, Noah did not forget him by whose gracious care they had been preserved. His first act after the leaving the ark was to build an altar and offer from every kind of the clean beast and fowl a sacrifice, thus manifesting his gratitude to Yahweh for the deliverance and his faith in the Yahshua, a great sacrifice. This offering was pleasing unto Yahweh, and a blessing resulted not only to the patriarch and his family, but unto all who should live upon the earth. The Yahweh smelled a sweet savor, and the Yahweh said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease. Here was a lesson for all succeeding generations. Noah had come forth upon a desolate earth, but before the preparing a house for himself, he built an altar on the Yahweh. His stock of the cattle was small and had been preserved at the great expense, yet he cheerfully gave a part to the Yahweh as an acknowledgement that all was his. In the like manner, it should be our first care to render our free will offerings to Yahweh. Every manifestation of his mercy and love toward us should be gratefully acknowledged, both by the acts of the devotion and by the acts of gifts to his cause. Thus, the gathering clouds and the falling rain should fill men with the constant terror from the fear of another flood. The Yahshua encouraged the family of Noah by a promise, I will establish my covenant with you. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow shall be seen in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between the Yahweh and every living creature. How great the condescension of the Yahweh and his compassion for his erring creatures, and thus placing the beautiful rainbow in the clouds as a token of his covenant with men, the Yeshua declares that when he looks upon the bow, he will remember his covenant. This does not imply that he would ever forget, but he speaks to us in our own language, that we may better understand him. For it was Yahweh's purpose that as the children of the after generation should ask the meaning of the glorious ark which spans the heavens, their parents should repeat the story of the flood and tell them that the Most High had bended the bow and placed it in the clouds as an assurance that the water shall never again overflow the earth. Thus, from the generation to generation, it would testify of the divine love unto man, and would strengthen his confidence in the Yahweh. In the heaven, the semblance of a rainbow encircles the throne and overarches the head of the Yahshua, where the prophet says, as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of the rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about the throne. This was the appearance of the lightness of the glory of the Yahshua, for the Revelator declares, behold, a throne was set in the heaven, and one sat on the throne. There was a rainbow round about the throne in the sight like unto an emerald. When man... Let's reread that last paragraph. In the heaven, the semblance of a rainbow encircles the throne and overarches the head of Yahshua. For the prophet said, as the appearance of the bow that is in the cloud in the day of the rain, so was the appearance of the brightness round about the throne. This was the appearance of the lightness of the glory of the Yahshua. For the Revelator declares, behold, a throne was set in the heaven, and one sat on the throne. There was a rainbow round about the throne, and the sight like unto an emerald. When man by his great wickedness invites the divine judgment, the Savior interceding with the Father in his behalf points to the bow and the cloud, to the rainbow around the throne and above his own head as a token of the mercy of Yahweh toward the repentant sinner. With the assurance given unto Noah concerning the flood, Yahweh himself has linked one of the most precious promises of his grace, as I have sworn that the waters of the Noah should no more go over the earth, so have I sworn that I would not be wroth with thee, nor rebuke thee, for the mountains shall depart, and the hills be removed, but my kindness shall not depart from thee, neither shall the covenant of my peace be removed, saith the Yahweh, that hath mercy on thee. As the Noah looked upon the powerful beast of the prey that came forth with him from the ark, he feared that his family, numbering only 8 persons, would be destroyed by them. But the Yahweh sent an angel to his servant with the assuring message, for the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air, upon all that moveth upon the earth and upon all the fishes of the sea. Unto your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you. Even as a green herb have I given you all things. Restore this time Yahweh had given man no permission to eat animal food. He intended that the race should subsist wholly upon the productions of the earth. But now that every green thing had been destroyed, he allowed them to eat the flesh of the clean beast that had been preserved in the ark. For the entire surface of the earth was changed at the flood. A third dreadful curse rested upon it in the consequence of sin. As the waters began to subside, the hills and the mountains were surrounded by a vast turbid sea. Everywhere were strewn the dead bodies of men and beasts. For the Yahweh would not permit these to remain to decompose and pollute the air. Therefore he made of the earth a vast burial ground, a violent wind which was caused to blow for the purpose of drying up the waters, moved them with great force, in some instance, even carrying away the tops of the mountains and heaping up trees and rocks and earth above the bodies of the dead. By the same means, the silver and gold, the choice wood and precious stones which had enriched and adorned the world before the flood and which the inhabitants had idolized, were concealed from the sight and search of men. For the violent action of the waters piling earth and rocks upon these treasures, and in some cases even forming mountains above them. For Yahweh saw that the more he enriched and prospered sinful men, the more they would corrupt their way before him. For the treasures that should have led them to glorify the bountiful giver had been worshipped, while the Yahweh had been dishonored and despised. For the earth presented an appearance of the confusion and desolation impossible to describe. For the mountains, once so beautiful in their perfect symmetry, had become broken and irregular. Stones, ledges, and ragged rocks were now scattered upon the surface of the earth. In many places, hills and mountains had disappeared, leaving no trace where they once stood. And plains had given place to the mountain ranges. For these changes were more marked in some places than in others. Where once had been the earth's richest treasures of the gold, silver, and precious stones were seen the heaviest marks of the curse. And upon the countries that were not inhabited, and those where there had been the least crime, the curse rested more lightly. At this time, immense forests were buried. These have since been changed to coal, forming the extensive coal beds that now exist and also yielding large quantities of oil, for the coal and oil frequently ignite and burn beneath the surface of the earth. Thus the rocks are heated, limestone is burned, and iron are melted. For the action of the water upon the lime adds fury to the intense heat and causes earthquakes, volcanoes, and fiery issues. As the fire and water come to in contact with the ledges of the rock and ore, there are heavy explosions underground, which sound like muffled thunder. The air is hot and suffocating. Volcanic eruptions follow, and these often failing to give sufficient vent to the heated elements, the earth itself is convulsed, the ground heaves, and it swells like the waves of the sea. Great fissures appear, and some times cities, villages, and burning mountains are swallowed up. For these wonderful manifestations will be more and more frequent and terrible just before the second coming of Yahshua and the end of the world as the signs of his speedy destruction. For the depths of the earth are the Yahshua's arsenal, whence were drawn weapons to be employed in the destruction of the old world. Waters gushing from the earth united with the waters from the heaven to accomplish the work of the desolation. Since the flood, fire as well as water has been the Yahweh's agent in the destroying every very wicked cities. For these judgments are sent that those who lightly regard Yahweh's law and temple upon his authority may be led to tremble before his power and to confess his just sovereignty. As men have beheld burning mountains pouring forth fire and flames and torrents of the melted ore, drying up rivers, overwhelming populous cities, and everywhere spreading ruin and desolation, the stoutest heart has been filled with the horror, and infidels and blasphemers have been constrained to acknowledge the infinite power of the Yahweh. Said the prophet of old, referring unto the scenes like these, "Oh, that thou wouldest rend the heavens, that thou wouldest come down, that the mountains might flow down at thy presence, as when the melting fire burneth, the fire causes the waters to boil, to make thy name known unto thine adversaries, that the nations may tremble at thy presence, when thou didst terrible things, which we look not for. Thou camest down, the mountains flowed down at thy presence. The Yahweh hath in his way, for the Yahweh hath his way in the whirlwind and in the storm, and the clouds are the dust of his feet. For he rebuked the sea and maketh it dry, and drieth up all the rivers." More terrible manifestations than the world has ever yet beheld will be witnessed at the second advent of Yahshua. For the mountains quake at him, and the hills melt, and the earth is burned at his presence. Yea, the world and all that dwell therein, who can stand before his indignation, and who can abide in the fierceness of his anger? Bow thy heavens, O Yahweh, and come down. Touch the mountains, and they shall smoke. Cast forth lightning, and scatter them. Shoot out thine arrows, and destroy them. I will show wonders in the heavens above and signs in the earth beneath, blood and fire and vapor, the smoke. And there were voices and thunders and lightnings, and there was a great earthquake, such as what was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. And there fell upon men a great hail out of the heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent. As the lightnings from the heaven unite with the fire on the earth, the mountains will burn like a furnace, and will pour forth terrible streams of lava. Overwhelming gardens and fields, villages and cities, seething molten masses thrown into the rivers will cause the waters to boil, sending forth a massive rock with the indescribable violence and scattering their broken fragments upon the land. Rivers will be dried up, the earth will be convulsed. Everywhere there will be dreadful earthquakes and eruptions. Thus Yahweh will destroy the wicked from all the earth. But the righteous will be preserved in the midst of these commotions, as Noah was preserved in the ark. Yahweh will be their refuge, and under his wings shall they trust. Says the psalmist, because thou hast made the Yahweh, which is my refuge, even the Most High, thy habitation, there shall be no evil befall thee. In the time of the trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion, and the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me, for Yahweh's promise is, because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high. Let's do that again. For Yahweh's promise is, because he hath set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on high, because he hath known my name. And what is that name? Yahweh, the Father. Well, this is the end of chapter 8. Okay, this brings the end of our steps. This is our contact. This is the 11th hour call. If you have a little click on the audio archive, we're going to close now with a song.